my addictions started when I was young. You know, it was everywhere. I mean, my mother was a bartender. My dad was an alcoholic. As I found out later on, alcoholism ran rampant in my family. So everywhere you looked, even the people that said you shouldn't do that were doing it. When I was 17, I struck out on my own. I left home against my mom's wishes. This really opened up some doors for me to be pretty free and not be accountable to anybody. I was very immature and hurt a lot of people, whether I was fighting with people, whether I was involved in, you know, sexual immorality. I was always hurting people. So the drugs and alcohol just became more of a part of my life. And as I went into the service, it continued to be more and more a part of my life. If you've been in the military and you go in young, everybody drinks. That's just part of the lifestyle. So as much as I really did well in the military, I graduated with meritorious promotions and the service was good for me, but the alcoholism really continued to get bad. And I started to have problems. I had intended on doing 20 years and retiring. And I could see that if I had stayed in, my alcoholism would have ruined that career. I was not a happy drunk. I was a mean drunk. And so that got me into a lot of trouble, because at this time, the drugs and alcohol had gotten me to a point where I really didn't care much about what other people thought. And it wasn't until my third marriage, it really started to hurt and bother me that I was hurting other people in my life, especially ones that I believed I cared so much about. My wife and I, at the time we weren't married, but we separated for a year. And when we separated for that year, I was pretty angry. And I wanted to forget my relationship with her, and I didn't care about anything, and that's when the drugs really started to play a big part in my life. That's when I started using a needle. Just the alcohol alone should have killed me, but I was pretty certain that if I continued the way that I was, that either the alcohol or the drugs would get me. I would either overdose or I would run off the road into a tree or another car, but it had gotten that bad.
Welcome to Unhooked. My name is Pastor Bernie Anderson.
And I'm Dr. Kitty, and today we're going to be talking about adult alcoholism.
Today we have with us Dr. Dora Clark Pine, and we're so pleased to have you with us to talk about this very important subject.
Thank you for having me here. Appreciate it.
Dora, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the prevalence of alcoholism in our society today.
Well, in relationship to regular alcohol use, I brought some statistics in that suggest that 56% of males use alcohol on a regular basis, and that's defined as 12 drinks or more in the previous year. About 34% represent female use, again, 12 drinks or more in the previous year. Infrequent use is more, less intense. It's 13.6% for the entire population and in the United States.
You brought up the concept of gender in there. I know we often think about an alcoholic as the man on the street who has the, you know, brown paper bag and he's drinking. The face of alcoholism is different than that, it sounds like.
Yes. You know, it can hit both women and males. If it does hit females, I understand it has a more a more dangerous impact on the physical system compared to males. And that's because, I guess, the proportion of fat in females' bodies is different from males' bodies, and so fat can't metabolize alcohol. So the alcohol remains in the circulatory system longer for females.
So if a woman and a man are drinking similar amounts, you're indicating that the physical harm to that is more potent in women.
Yes, yes. And even though in terms of alcohol abuse or dependence, the numbers for females may be lower in the end, if females do drink and they do it in a pervasive sort of way, chronically over a long period of time, damage to the internal system can be more extensive as a result. So the liver, the heart, the brain can be affected, from what I understand. Mm-hmm.
So, Dora, talk to us a little bit about the high that's created by alcohol. I mean, that's why people keep coming back. What happens?
Yeah. Well, certainly, alcohol in and of itself can produce some changes in the chemistry of the brain, which is associated with the high that people talk about. But there's also a process known as neuroadaptation that takes place. So a person can maybe obtain a specific high, and they say, oh, that's the first time I've ever felt that way. And we go chasing that later on by doing the same thing. And they keep chasing it, but it continues to be a little more elusive over the course of time. And pretty soon they're actually maybe drinking just to feel normal. And as people have probably heard, other people say, over time, now they're drinking just to not feel bad. Yeah. So in a sense, it's almost as if you move from maybe this perception of reaching this pinnacle, this high, that over the course of time becomes a prison, so to speak. You know, you're not able to come out of that prison because you're stuck into the cycle of not feeling bad. And you know, if people understood that I could, you know, somebody could give you something and you would feel good the first time or maybe the first few times, but down the road you'll never be the same person perhaps again without serious interventions, who would really want to
make a
take
different
the
choice.
Risk?
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. Yeah.
In terms of the topic of choice, you know, we hear a lot now about generational curse. Do you know I carry the DNA for alcoholism? So can you tell us a little bit about what that's talking about?
Well, from what I understand, they're certainly nature and nurture do combine. Either they work together against each other and can result in problems with substance abuse or alcohol abuse and dependence. If you work in a nursery or you work with young children, you can kind of see differences in terms of temperaments, you know. And so some kids are curious about the world and will investigate it at all costs, you know. And translates later in life maybe to taking risks with substances like alcohol and that sort of thing. We also know familial patterns are very much recognized. Lots of twin studies, and they've noticed concordance rates between identical twins. One twin having alcoholic problems is more likely, the other twin is more likely to have an alcoholic problem compared to the percentage for fraternal twins compared to just siblings within a family system. So we know there's some genetic components. We also know environmental factors play a role too. I mean, if you're raised in a very loving home with parents who give you consistent discipline and love you and teach you great coping skills, you're probably less likely to ever begin experimenting with drugs, let alone becoming addicted to drugs in and of themselves or alcohol.
You raise a very important point about that balance of nature and nurture, you know, with the scientific literature showing that even a heritable vulnerability can change in an improved social environment.
Yes, yes, very much so. And it's some of the research, I guess, coming out over the last decade has also shown that with certain ethnic groups, you might see some genetic components at play. I think it's called, I'm not exactly sure what they do with the asterisk, but it's ADL, ADLH asterisk 2. And apparently a pretty good proportion of Asians will inherit this gene allele, which is a variant, a mutation of sorts, which will actually kind of prevent them from becoming alcoholic because they have the inability to break down alcohol into acetaldehyde, which is then broken down into other things that are then cleaned out of the system. So they take a drink, they will likely become sick. You know, it's sort of like if you take a drink and you get sick, chances of you picking up a drink and drinking again go way down. My mother is a good example of that. She was from the Philippines, and so if she took one drink, that was it for her. Mm-hmm. Now, my dad, on the other hand, who was Caucasian, born and bred in Michigan, he very much was into alcohol and could drink quite a few people. You know.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that story. Yeah, that's a good example. We're going to take a break right now, and we'll be back.
The addiction really prevented me from seeing a lot of things, but I just wanted to be happy, and I thought that all the things that I wanted would give me happiness, but I was never really convinced of that. In the meantime, Mary and I had gotten back together, and the one thing that we agreed was that if we were going to make it, something seriously drastic had to change. But I couldn't, and I saw the impact that it had on them, and that hurt me. And it was miserable that I couldn't quit drinking, or I couldn't quit doing drugs, that I couldn't live the kind of life that would perpetuate a good life for me and for them. And that's when the Lord stepped in. I was in jail. I had gotten arrested, and while I was in jail, waiting for my hearing, is when I really reflected back on my life, and it was just a trail of ruin and misery. And I think I was at that point where I said, Lord, if you are really there, if you really exist, and everything that I've come to understand about you is true, if it's all true, then I need to know, I want to know. It had gotten so bad prior to that that I had actually put a gun to my head. I'd actually stuck the barrel in my mouth, but I couldn't pull the trigger. And I'm sure that the Lord was intervening there, because when I was sitting in that jail cell and I was asking him if he really existed, that I needed to know that if it wasn't so, then I would probably pull the trigger and check out. But at that point in time, everything changed. It didn't happen instantly, but because I believed that he did answer me, a lot of things happened pretty quickly. It was miraculous. I quit drinking, I quit smoking, I quit doing drugs. All the same day. And God showed me victory and has shown me a new life.
Welcome back to Unhooked. Dr. Dora, would you tell us a little bit more? You mentioned that your father was an alcoholic. How do you understand alcoholism through that experience?
Well, he had been in the military and the Marines for some years and had gotten into drinking in that respect. But his father was an alcoholic, so there was definitely a genetic component to that process, I believe. But certainly the military made it worse. And growing up in a home environment where you have one parent who's constantly drinking and and there's a lot of fighting in the home environment, you get a real negative picture of alcohol and what it can do to devastate families. My dad was not only a drinker, he was a tobacco user, and towards the end of his life he was starting to develop signs of emphysema. So on top of that, he was also schizophrenic. So bad combination completely, you know, bad combination.
You mentioned something about being in the military, and perhaps sometimes there's environments in which alcoholism is more likely to occur.
Definitely. In the military, at least when he was in, it was definitely encouraged. It was a way for guys to get together and kind of blow off steam and to relax and so forth. But you know, when you develop a habit of drinking, that over the course of time will have a kind of avalanche downward spiraling impact on your physical as well as your emotional health, which it did for my father.
You know, Lou shared his personal story, and he was talking about, he also was in the military, and he talked about starting with alcohol, but that it moved to other substances for him.
Yeah. And for a number of people, tobacco and alcohol have been considered to be gateway drugs, and soften up somehow the nervous system and make it more likely for people to kind of engage in the use of other substances, illegal or legal substances. For my father, that didn't happen. It was always tobacco and always alcohol, but it was definitely a downward spiral. Yeah.
So does the media play a role maybe in contributing to people getting involved in drinking?
See it around sports events all the time,
with
commercials. And obviously they're highlighting the uplifting effects of alcohol. They're never going to show you the downside effects of alcohol. But I had a chance to see that real up close, and was not a pleasant experience at all.
They make it sound like it's a great social. It provides that ability to meet people and socialize. And Lou was actually talking in his piece about actually being not a happy drunk. So it seems like there's different ways it presents itself.
Yeah, I can remember times when family members would get together and drink, and they would be smoking and playing cards and having fun. But I can remember a lot more times where my father was drinking alone, and he usually started out in a bad mood, and that mood tended to get worse as he drank. So it definitely was not a positive experience for me growing up. And really, you know, if you grow up not being Adventist, not really having a faith system intact, you really struggle to find purpose and meaning of life when you grow up in a family system where there is generally no happiness that you see around you.
What do you think the Bible, Scripture, talks about alcohol so much? It does, you know, it speaks of strong drink
the raging and the mockery and that sort of thing. And I think there definitely is some truth to that. And like I said, I saw it close up, didn't like what I saw. And I'm just glad to be here today because, God came into my life at the time I needed him to help me understand there was a reason to actually live. So,
was there ever a time where you were afraid that, I mean, you would be vulnerable to
alcoholism? Very much so. And I actually, I went to a party once and I got as drunk as I could because I was curious about it. And my ability to put away the alcohol suggested that I probably had inherited my father's genetics. And thank goodness I later became an Adventist and didn't go down that road, because I'm not sure where I would be if I had gone down that road.
They often talk about with alcohol use, you're going to be able to engage in behaviors that you otherwise wouldn't normally do.
Very much so, yes. You become less inhibited. In some societies, when people drink, the norms are in place that you act responsibly. In our country, that doesn't seem to be the case, and people do horrendous things under the influence of alcohol. So, it can be a mean drug.
Very devastating to society with its availability and then the very ramifications
so.
Of that.
Very much so. Definitely.
Does it make you a bit frustrated? I mean, when we see in the culture and the media and adults sort of modeling bad behavior with alcohol, thinking about the next generation coming up.
Yeah, you know, if they're modeling the upliftedness of the drug, you know, the commercials and the shows on TV, you're talking about how funny you can be with alcohol, you just cringe when you think of some children may be predisposed to not respond to alcohol in a positive way at all. And actually, it may lead them down a very self-destructive, not just self-destructive road, but a road that destroys family members who surround them. Yeah.
Wow. Thank you so much, Dr. Dora. That's it. Unhooked, we'll be back in a little bit.
Addiction is miserable. Today I can understand that my addiction created a lot of stress, a lot of pain, a lot of doubt. Just it was miserable because there was nothing that I could be sure of. Everything was in question and there was nobody to turn to. And I just, I thank God. I thank God for answering my prayers and my question about whether He existed and whether there could be another life for me because I had made such a mess of my life. God has blessed me. He has helped me to see victory over alcohol, over drugs, and a terrible attitude. And I can say today that I don't feel like my past is wasted years. All of the things that have happened in my past have culminated to the things that I've learned as a result of them. He has shown me that He's there. And He's there for me. I'm not just a number in the lottery. He cares about me. I have a relationship with Him, and that relationship is going to be eternal. I believe today more than ever that if we seek Him out, that He will stretch His hand out. He will answer us. And it is His will that we should live the life that He created us for. And I feel like I'm experiencing that. My name's Lou, and I'm unhooked.
Dr. Dora just shared with us about the devastation of alcoholism in adults. Alcoholism, because alcohol is socially acceptable, is the number one addiction that people fall into. And so addressing this addiction is extremely important for us. Lou shared with us his story of alcoholism and all of the questions that came about as he was struggling to recover. Questions like, does God exist? And can there be a different life for me? Those questions are extremely real questions for people. They're questions that everyone has. How we answer those questions is extremely important in our recovery. And you know, I want you to know that God is happy to have us ask Him those questions, to be very personal with Him. Lord, do You exist? Are You there for me? And in my experience, as a pastor and a therapist and a teacher, many of our students, many people who are struggling with addictions have that very question. Even Christians have that question. God, do You exist? But do You exist for me? So answering that question about God and His nature and His character, God, are you big enough to handle my life? Are you big enough to overcome this addiction in my life? There are other addictions that sometimes Christians fall into that can be unique. For example, judgmentalism and self-righteousness is one that I see a lot among Christian addicts. People who put themselves above other people and feel that it's okay to stand high and to look low upon others. A lot of times what I find is that people who struggle with judgmentalism and self-righteousness really are insecure people, and they fall into the trap or addiction of judgmentalism and self-righteousness in order to overcome their feelings of insecurity. The reality is there's only one person that we can totally be secure in. We can't be secure totally in ourselves. We can't find our security in other people. We can't find our security in other things. And so self-righteousness, judgmentalism, Lord, we ask that you would bring those things to death in us when they exist so that we can humbly approach you as the one who can give us recovery from every form of addiction. For information about how you can break away from habits that hurt, contact Adventist Recovery Ministries. And for prayer, call 1-888-446-7388. Choose to become unhooked today.